The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
What's your name?
Kenneth Kitson.
Where are you from?
Reno.
Will you give yourself to this program?
Yes, sir.
Right hand, please.
That has healed well.
Any diminished sensation?
No.
There is nothing that you wouldn't do for this country. You have the strength to do what's necessary.
Welcome to the program.
The trailer from the movie The Bourne Legacy. We're going to be reviewing that movie along with The Expendables 2 during the last 10 minutes of Issues, Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, August the 22nd. Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us. He's pastor for Witness and Youth at Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, and host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back.
These Bourne movies are among my favorite movies of all time. I just think they're fantastic. I don't know if you agree or not, but... How does this one, the latest, Bourne Legacy, compare to the previous ones?
I agree that the original story arc of those first three movies is fantastic. It really does just take spy films to a whole new level, and the genre of, you know, your government's bad, their government's bad, who's right, who's wrong, almost a little bit of mystery involved, they're fantastic. By comparison, sadly, Bourne Legacy doesn't quite live up. It's a good film, it's an enjoyable spy film, but if you're measuring with the stick of the previous Bourne movies, it's just not quite there. Part of that is probably because they're attempting to move off of the original main character. They do a pretty good job of that. I think overall the main character is enjoyable. But the intricacy of the plot isn't as tight as it is in the previous movies. It has a lot of setup. It kind of expects you to know maybe a few too many things from the previous movies. And right as you're really getting going, you're starting to think, okay, they're going to find some answers. This is starting to make sense. The movie's over. And it kind of hits you out of the blue. You're like, why is it over? There needs to be more. And, you know, you've been there long enough, but I was really willing to sit there another half an hour if they'd tie up some more loose ends. So it just isn't the full package that those first movies will. But it was good. I mean, it's an enjoyable spy film.
Real quickly, because I want to get to the worldview embedded in these films, how do they do it without the Mark Damon character?
Yeah, it's like going on while the other movies are going on. They don't really explain too tightly. It's kind of like you need more information from the previous movies. But during the same time period, there is another kind of scandal with a related program that isn't the same program that Jason Bourne was in that needs to be shut down, and they're trying to do it. They're eliminating the agents who were out in the field that are kind of on this super virus that gives them extra intelligence and extra strength. So they're doing this at the same time to avoid another public scandal scandal, kind of like what Bourne is causing while the original movies are going on. And so it kind of makes sense, and it really could have made sense. They just don't quite tie it up, and then they really throw you for a loop. A little minor spoiler here, but it's like at the end of this one, they're trying to tie up this loose end with this program, no more programs, blah, 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 and then suddenly there's another program with another super kind of human in a whole other thing that they're going to bring in to try to fix this problem, and it just really gets almost foolish at that point.
You touched on this just a minute ago. With a few minutes here, the worldview of this is kind of layers of truth, lie upon lie. You never know what is true. Even the main character in some of these films doesn't know who he really is. That's part of the whole thing. How would you describe the worldview of the Bourne films?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because it doesn't fit into what I'd call, you know, your classical description. The best thing I can sum it up with is conspiracy theory. The idea that behind everything is someone else who really knows more. There's an inner circle within the inner circle within the inner circle, and that's who's really in the know, and they're all controlling everything top to bottom throughout the world one way or the other. This can be as simple as thinking that, your pastor or your church elders are running the congregation, and nobody knows what's going on. This can be as deep as the idea of they're called the Illuminati, this super secret organization that actually runs all world business everywhere and has been doing it since the Knights Templar started it way back when, or whatever. I mean, the conspiracy theory has a whole level of ways it plays out, but it's this kind of distrust of authority, super distrust of authority that questions everything and wants to believe that authority is actually held somewhere, almost supernaturally, by someone. But to fit that into, like, is that modernism, is that postmodernism, rationalism, that's a little more difficult to do. I mean, it certainly seems to have come about more in the postmodern world. We cling to this idea. I think there's a rise in these kind of movies. But I'd have trouble saying that it's like a postmodern thing or really pinning down what the philosophical underpinnings of it are.
With less than a minute here, what about the violence? The previous movies were a lot of hand-to-hand violence, very cool, if you ask me, but it's an issue, isn't it? About a minute here.
Yeah, you know, I had a lot more trouble in the next movie, Expendables 2, because some of the violence was simply gratuitous to the point where it's not just, you know, a car exploding, but, you know, a guy getting punched and blood flying across the camera. Personally, that was a little more than I'm comfortable watching. In this one, the violence wasn't too heavy. It was pretty tame in terms of a lot of choreography, but not a lot of gruesomeness. How does the Christian handle that? I believe this falls a little bit into Christian piety. It's hard to tell a good story without conflict or romance, and you're going to get those in film. So at what point does it cause you to actually be the one doing those things, or at what point are you cheering for the mutilization of man or the lust of man and woman? That's a line each of us have to kind of ask as we engage entertainment. And at what point are we learning worldview and story and critical thinking skills from the media we imbibe in?
I pronounce you man and knife. You and your little psychotic gang of mutts. Today is payback. 6 months of pure plutonium is powerful enough to change the balance of the world. Imagine what 5 tons would do. You'll need more men if you expect to get out of here alive.
I'm back.
You can't let the contents of that safe fall into the wrong hands. What's the plan?
Track him, find him, kill him.
There's a trailer from The Expendables 2. Pastor Fisk, what do you say about a movie like this? It's star-packed.
Yeah, I was excited, actually. I had watched part of the first one and actually stopped. I was so disappointed in it. But then this one, since they had more stars buy into it, they had new super action stars from the 80s coming back to make even a bigger cast, I thought, well, gosh, maybe they'll get a real writer and a real director to make this thing into an actually really good action movie. Kind of, you know, this classic style, good guys fight the bad guys, save the world kind of thing. It just It's like a third grader wrote the script, and I feel bad because I know that it was partially penned by Sylvester Stallone, and I don't want to, you know, he wrote Rocky, too, and Rocky's a great film, but they used tape to splice thing together. The cinematography's not that bad, but they might as well have gone that route, because you have all of these great stars, and the best that they can do is throw some cheesy one-liners from other contexts into this movie, from their old movies, to try to kind of get a laugh and a rise, and paint Sylvester Stallone as like the chief of the action heroes. So I guess my disappointment level was higher because I just really wanted someone to take all these great faces of action and make a good movie, and they didn't. They blew some stuff up. Ironically, I think the strong point in the movie is Jean-Claude Van Damme as the antagonist.
Really?
He's a horrible actor, but he was fantastic. He's a great antagonist. I love you. Really? Yeah, exactly. Really. He was the strong point. I wanted to see Chuck Norris. I was excited about that. It was horrible. They totally misused him. You have a joke. You have a classic Chuck Norris joke, which I love Chuck Norris jokes, but they make it in movie about his character, but he's not Chuck Norris in the movie. He's some guy named Bernie. And it just doesn't work. It's just cheesy. So I don't know. I mean, if you like action for action's sake, maybe rent this thing. Violence, again, was a little over the top. There's a Jet Li scene where the guy's just got a little too much blood flying for my taste. But I'd stay home unless you love these guys, you know, more than anything else.
Was it what they call kind of classically self-referential? Because it sounds like basically each guy's in the movie doing his own shtick. And plot character takes a back seat to what we already know about all these guys in all their other movies. About 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's about right. It just was so stale. I mean, even Arnold's I'll be back and I'm back. I mean, it just, he's done that shtick as a joke in other movies already. You know, so how many times can you do this same thing over again before it gets old? Where if you pulled this cast together and you had a real writer and you got a top, you get J.J. Abrams to direct this film, and you get one of the best films you've ever seen as an action lover in your life. But they didn't do that. They just kind of spliced it together for the sake of old times. Reminds me of a movie that I forget when it came out in the 90s with four old famous heroes who were, I think Tommy Lee Jones was in it maybe, and they were going to be space pilots, old guys going back into the space program.
Space Cowboys.
And it was like they were remembering all their old movies together on screen, and you were supposed to enjoy it. And it's like, well, you know, I'd like to watch a real movie. So that's kind of where I came out of this one with.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of Witness and Youth at Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting. We'll post a link to Worldview Everlasting at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Jonathan.
Sure.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to continue our series on the historic liturgy, talking with Pastor Will Whedon about the gradual and the epistle reading. Also tomorrow, we'll discuss Mark chapter 7, beginning at verse 31, Jesus healing a deaf man. It'll be our pastor's roundtable. Pastors Kirk Clayton and Michael Brockman will be our guests tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. I'll talk with you tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.